What's up, guys? Rick Kakis here, and welcome to The Last Word, where I'm joined by a cheetah who really likes bees, a Bontis, Thai guy Travis, who's fighting for his life over weird stuff sometimes, and I found out today that he only sees bees that walk, which is weird, and not fly, I don't know, and G, and I don't know G's stance on bees, so I don't really have anything there, so.
This is an entire inside joke. The start of the podcast is going, is this the right podcast?
Yeah.
Hello, everybody. It is Ebont. Yes, The Beekeepers. That's actually a movie I would be interested in.
That's a movie. Jason Statham movie.
Yeah. Looks like a fun popcorn flick. Hello, everybody. It is Ebontis. That was Scarrow doing the introduction
today. No, it's
today,
Rick Kakis.
Okay, I'm sorry. He's masquerading today as Rick Kakis, amongst other things. Yeah, that was. Your intro's in there, but everything in the pre-show is gone. So if you got to see the pre-show, I hope you enjoyed it. Anyway, we are here today with our wonderful co-host Thai Guy Travis. Cognito is out exploring the world of PAX East today, hanging out with all of the Lords of Gaming and all of them. I think the writers and the podcast and everybody else is out there. I saw them all over Twitter, kind of taking their trip on the train and everything. So hopefully they have a good time. GDC, I think, is going on the other side of the coast, which Travis has been around
doing some
coverage of that, I know. And then we have two amazing guests joining us because there was a moment where I was going to be totally by myself, just talking to the stream for 2 hours completely alone. So I figured I'd see if anybody wanted to join in, these two fine gentlemen. Both Scarrow, who already did his introductions, and then G Miners, who has no idea what he walked into tonight, is also joining us. G, how you doing tonight, sir?
I'm good. I'm excited to debate Scarrow in the latest event that Bungie revealed, and see how much we can hype up the e-beef. Just kind of channel that into the next GCX.
Okay.
We'll get a boxing match going, and then, you know.
I'm not much of a boxer. I played hockey growing up, so I don't fight unless it's on the ice. So if we strap on some skates, I'll duke, but
I can go to the local free skate.
Both Florida teams are like really good. So I'm sure there's an ice rink within 5 miles of the hotel. So let's do it.
All right. So our guest will be having the one-on-one GCXWW wrestling boxing match. All the wrong acronyms there.
WW Wrestling Boxing.
World Wrestling
Boxing Match. It's the new league that we have created for just these two gentlemen.
Let's go.
This podcast is off the rails literally before it started, so I apologize today to everyone who hears this because it's a mess behind the scenes, and Travis started it, so that's pretty normal.
I did start.
Yeah. But what have you guys been up to this week? Travis, we'll start with you just to see what you've been doing.
Yes, it is the best time of the year. It is the Game Developer Conference in San Francisco, the city in which I live and breathe. And it is the best game conference now that E3 is gone. It's the only time of the year that every single developer, small and large, is in the same place at the same time. So it's awesome. Everybody's meeting up and hanging out, and It's just great to see everybody together. I have been busy throughout this entire week, which is why I was originally supposed to not be at the show, but I was able to move around some appointments and be here. But I've been basically meeting behind the scenes inside developer hotel rooms and stuff to take a look at stuff that I cannot talk about. We'll be having a lot to reveal next week and beyond, which is really exciting stuff. Beyond, yes. So yeah,
what is that? Is that a joke?
Oh, it's a podcast Beyond on IGN.
It's a reference to
IGN. Oh, okay. It's like, oh god, I missed that.
Which I've also been on. You can watch me on that show a couple times.
You've got the hat trick, right?
Yeah, I've got them all. I've been on Nintendo a few times, PlayStation a few times, Xbox once.
Yep. Game Scoop, so, that one's probably just like not gonna happen for
you. Have to be 70 years old to be on that show, I think. I think that's the rule.
That's fair.
I'm very excited to talk about that. I'm also producing, I mentioned this last month, but I'm producing IGN First in April, in which I will be announcing a game that the world does not know about yet on April 2nd, and then providing a month-long coverage of that game It is really exciting stuff, and I can't talk a word about it, but needless to say, I will be knee-deep in that and also traveling internationally to go and produce that coverage. So it's going to be fun. Good times.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. Scarra, what have you been up to? Let's pick and fights on the internet.
Dog, it's been a week, let me tell you. So I got... Bungie sent the collector's edition. I got it on Friday. I, according to Raid or Emblem Report, was the first person to solve them. Within 15 minutes, I was getting harassed on Twitter, on Discord, in-game, everywhere, of these Emblem weirdos wanting to know how I got them. It was ridiculous. It went on all weekend until they were finally leaked. Wasn't me. So that was awesome. Then Collector's Edition on Monday was able to be revealed. Tuesday, I did something important on Tuesday, but I forget what it was. Oh, the like Slammer Farms and stuff was really cool in the reveal stream and stuff. That was awesome. We'll talk about that. I was the Bungie Bounty today. And in my real job, my beginning of the year project proposals were due this week. So I've been like proposing new polymers and stuff. It's been a lot of fun. Nice. I've been super busy. It's great because
it's all secret sauce that you can't talk about since you're proposing them.
I am under NDA. Yeah. For all of my stuff. I just kind of understood when you work at a big company like that, it's like if you share company secrets, like you'll be shot. So
snipers outside your window right now. So it's fine.
Dude, it's pretty intense business. I also unrelated. I just got my first, kind of related, first yearly bonus and raise of my entire life ever. And holy, it's a great feeling. I was like in that meeting with my boss and I was like giggling the whole time. And she's like, are you okay? I was like, I've never done this before. This is great. Continue, please. And
you're enjoying the life of being employed in the corporate world and actually at a successful company as opposed to many other people fighting the rough road.
Yeah. Right now, so. I mean, at the materials, same as everything's, you know, they borrow too much money. It's a hard, you know, everyone's destocking and all headwinds and all that. I'm a chemist, so I deal less with the business side of thing. It's just fun, man. So I don't know. Awesome. So I've been busy. It's a nice juxtaposition to the last 2 months, which have been like absolutely nothing going on in the Destiny. Basic research, nothing too fun. So it's good to have stuff to keep me occupied again. So nice. I'm happy.
G, life, gaming, what you been up to?
Not much. Winter just concluded, so I've been doing a lot of skiing. Got out to Vermont twice. Yeah, Vermont twice, Canada up at Whistler once, and then we were just up in New Hampshire. Was it this last 2 weekends ago, I want to say? Not this past weekend, but the one before that. So driving around a lot, flying over to Canada or Seattle to Canada. So that was fun. And then just Destiny-wise, just been kind of started doing solo raid challenges, been getting my, I guess, feet wet into that, if that's the saying. Starting those up. They're really fun. I'm mauled when I do them, though. Yeah. Struggle and yell. But they're fun to kind of brute force your way through. And then other than that, just been doing some other kind of group raid challenges, putting them up on YouTube, kind of just trying to make funnier videos, things like that. They've been doing well, received way better than I expected. Just mix of that, changing things up, having fun streaming, playing the game, even though it's a dry season, just kind of making my own fun. Yeah.
What solos are you doing right now?
I did Ron, I did Caretaker, and I did Acquisition. So we'll see if I continue stuff, but I don't know. I'm mauled when I do it, so I don't.
Yeah.
I don't always want to be in a negative mind space.
Yeah, I go through like phases where I'll hit them really hard and then I'll get burnt out and then I'll take like a 6 month break and then I'll go back and redo everything. It's nice when there's like Explicator and Aatrox are like genuinely really fun solos. So it's nice when you have stuff like that versus like Nezzy's probably one of the most frustrating things I've ever done in my entire life. So
yeah,
those burnout
strats. If you don't have like a sword, you can get launched off the map and other things like that. So I did it on Hunter, so it was all not too bad, but
okay. Yeah. So good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
As for myself, I have been playing Dragon's Dogma 2 for about a week. I have seen the credits, put out a review yesterday. That game, even as I was writing up the review, just kind of kept getting better and better in my head, just the way you think back on it, look on it. It's very special in the way it is very, very organic. Your experience, which way you go, what you choose to do, they do a very good job allowing you to explore the world in a way that feels natural without just point A to point B. If you go somewhere and time passes, you might have a different outcome on a quest if you tackle it now versus tackle it later. Some choice, like not all choices are going to matter, and you know, not all games are going to, but there's definitely some where there was a guy asking me to do something, seemed a little ridiculous. I did two of them, and the third one didn't quite do it right. And he's like, all right, never mind. I'm not going to work with you anymore. I'm going to go like work with somebody else on this task. So you're like, I'm not going to get to do that side of the quest. There's a lot of stuff I didn't see because the game is just massive. So I didn't explore everything. Kind of got to a point where I did want to at least see the credits, and then there's more. It is a big game, but it is really, really cool. It's got some drawbacks to it with regards to it's not going to be for everybody. There's a lot of running
it's
around.
It's janky.
It's got some jank to it. It does. But you are going to be running around on foot a decent amount. But it's kind of one of those things. If you want to fast travel, it's a limited resource. So it actually makes you consider if you're going to fast travel or not. If you're going to go travel by ox cart, which because this is like kind of fantasy type realm. So if you're going to travel by ox cart, well, you can kind of sit in the little back carriage and then doze off if you want to pass time. Sometimes you'll just show up at your destination. Sometimes you'll wake up in the middle of a battle halfway to your destination. Some giant ogre comes in, smashes the ox cart. Everybody runs off. You have to fight the guy for like 15 minutes, climb up on his back. And then by the time you're all done, you realize you're only halfway to the destination. It's the middle of the night and it's terrifying. So it's just things that naturally happen like that, that you wouldn't expect. And then all of a sudden you're going, okay, now I got to figure this situation out.
Yeah.
There was one quest that I had a really frustrating moment because if you kind of unsheath your weapon in a town, everybody gets on edge. So I did that, and then I accidentally clicked a button and just like took a full swing at some guy in the middle of a palace, basically pissed the entire world off. I think I cut a cutscene short that was going to explain this quest. So I was just running laps around this thing. You had to do it at night when something was going on. You could only do it every other night. So you had to sleep until night until it happened. Finally, when that happened, I'm like, so it was kind of a facepalm moment because I feel like I should have seen it, but it's not obvious if you missed the little moment. So that was like my one frustration of the quest. But there was another one I tried, and it was the stupidest thing I tried, and it worked. And then I figured out the more I played the game that there's about four other ways that you could do that quest. So it's one of those that's really cool. The combat is probably one of the best parts. There was not a battle I really avoided. If there's a big giant two-story ogre, I'm going to go after him and take him down. It's just going to take me a while. The vocation,
is it third person?
Third person, more, you've got fantasy combat, so...
You didn't play the first one?
I've never even heard of it.
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. It's kind of a cool...
What is it similar to? Like Skyrim?
Nothing. It's not nothing. Similar to anything. That's kind of why it's cool.
Yeah,
it kind of sounds like Baldur's Gate from what you're describing.
So
no,
it's
not like Baldur's
it's
Gate.
It's not turn-based or anything like that. It's real-time.
I didn't even know that's what Baldur's Gate was. So, I just mean the story aspect.
Yeah, yeah.
The
forgot
cool
Destiny
thing,
players don't play other games.
I play other games, but it's like Minecraft and like Warzone. So, and I've been playing a lot of the card one, the poker
Bellatro?
One.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
awesome
I've been playing
game.
A lot of that. Yeah,
that's a fun one. No, the biggest thing about Dragon's Dogma, you can have a third-person adventure, whether you're swinging a melee sword, casting spells, you have different vocations that you can pick for combat, but what makes Dragon's Dogma unique is the pawn system, and there are pawns that travel with you. It is a single-player game that has
pawns
the most...
companions.
Pawns are companions, yeah.
Thank you, thank
I hadn't
you.
I got there.
I was like, is this a chess game, and I just missed
no,
that, or...
but they are...
They're
they are
an action of people who are destined to follow the hero and help him or
yep.
her... achieve their goal.
Yeah.
Oh.
So if
like
you want to play
people with no free will of their own who just want to help you out.
Yeah, and they can travel between realms. So the cool thing is, like, if you want to play a ranged class, like an archer or a mage, you can hire a couple pawns that are up in the front, like a rogue and a warrior, taking the beating and putting in the work up front while you're in the back safe. I did the melee class, so I had a healer and support cleanser behind me, as long as a caster who's every so often you see this like iceberg come flying through. So you can kind of have support in either way that you want to play. But the pawns also are really cool because the whole internet works together. So if I take my pawn on a certain quest or go find a chest, and then if you can hire my, you can hire two other pawns besides your main one. And if you hire, say, my pawn, and I've already gone through and done a quest, or I found a chest, you might be in an area and my pawn might call out and say, hey, I was in this area with on another adventure and there's a quest around here. Do you want me to show you where it's at? And they will straight up walk you to it.
Oh, that's cool.
And they'll say, and if they've experienced the fight against, say, a big two-story ogre, they might be like, hey, ice is very effective against this guy. So they will bring their knowledge from the world into your gameplay to kind of help you. And you can also ignore them if you want to, but if you keep your, they talk a lot, but there's actually a decent amount of good stuff in what they say too.
Interesting.
It's a very special, unique experience. It has some jank to it. It's going to, but as you go through the world, no one person's going to have the same experience. Cause even each vocation, you can have like 4 equipped abilities of like 12.
Yeah.
So everybody's going to pick a different build. And then you can have like passive perks from all of the vocations. You can pick one from each of the ones you try. You can switch mid run. You're not going to be a warrior the entire time. You can just swap. It's a cool one. Like, if you want a very unique adventure, it's one I suggest trying. I ended up giving it a 9 just because too many things. It has a decent amount of jank around the edges. And I know for some people, whether it's encumbrance or stamina or the vague nature of the way the quests are, it's not going to hold your hand at all. It's not going to land for everybody. But for me, I looked past all of that stuff, or I got used to it enough that the experience was so good despite anything that I held against it. So I ended up giving it a 9 in my review, and it's a fantastic game. It's not going to be for everybody, but if it sounds intriguing, it's a damn fun journey.
Travis, yeah, did you do this one too?
I didn't do the review, but I played it a bunch. Gotcha. And also I'm a huge fan of the first game, the original Dragon's Dogma, which is now, I think, 12 years old.
Yep, it was 12 years, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, I'm like a guy who gets like really invested in games. And so like these last 3 years, there's all of these games that are like, they're all their own experiences and you play them for a couple months and then you drop them. I just can't do that. It's just not the type of gamer I am.
That's the way to play games, bro.
I know a lot of people feel that way, but it's just not.
You either live it or you don't try it at all. Is that?
That's how I am with most media. Yeah. That's how
it'd be like. So you are One Piece, but you skip 50 other shows.
I don't like anime.
I'm just using it as an example because it has 1,000 episodes.
Yeah.
It's never made sense to me that people have like games that they main, because it'd be like, you know, if you were into movies and you're like, I'm a Godfather main, I just watched The Godfather.
Well, I mean, I kind of like, I have my franchises. Like, I really like Walking Dead. I really like Doctor Who. I really like the MCU. And I like really like horror movies, but like, I treat horror movies like a kind of a singular franchise. Like, they're different, but they all kind of, they're part of the same ethos almost. You know what I mean? But it's like, I'm really bad at venturing out. And it's, I just don't really get a lot of intrigue from that. So. It's just kind of
I'm like the opposite, where I have ADHD with games and it doesn't take me very long to get burned out on game at all. And then I want to move on to the next thing because variety is the spice of life and you miss out on so much if you don't get to play that stuff.
I also, if something doesn't hook me right away, and I'm not a fan of third person games. There are very few third person games that I like, but like I tried Helldivers and I want to love that game because it's such a phenomenon and everyone's loving it. But I played a couple missions and I was like, there's nothing here for me. So I just stopped. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not
land on variety or the spice.
Dude, I don't
not
mind
talking
playing
about Dune, by the way. Sorry.
That was a good movie. Part 1, part 2. Very good. What was I going to say? No, I don't mind playing different games. I think I'm very like alike with Scarrow in the sense that like certain games I'll just get hooked into. It takes a lot for me to want to play certain games. Especially since sometimes I can be pessimistic and then I'll find little things that I don't like and those will kind of slowly add up. And a big driving factor for me has always been playing games with friends too. So I think a lot of the best games that come out, I'm assuming Dogma is a single player game. So a lot of those best games, like even Elden Ring, God of War, like those, I wouldn't mind playing them. I just don't, that's not, I guess, usually where I prioritize my time. It's like, if I'm going to game, I want to do it with friends because a lot of the fun, other than D2 is a bit of an anomaly, but every other game I play, it's just hop on with friends, make fun of each other, scream the whole time, get off. And then if it's a single player game, I'm just like, dude, I'd rather watch a movie or sometimes I'd rather just do other stuff. But the downside is if you're not doing variety, then like a game like D2 gets really stale, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So Dragon's Dogma, the reason I said it's not like anything else out there is because it's a Eastern RPG. It's made by Capcom. And if you played their games, it's not at all like a Skyrim or what you would consider, you know, like a Baldur's Gate, right? I would consider that like a very Western RPG in its presentation. And so the advantages of that is that it's weird. It doesn't follow a lot of like the table stakes stuff that you expect from like fantasy RPGs from the West. It does things like differently, like the whole crawling on people mechanic and the way that they do pawns, and even some of the stuff they do with like side quests and travel, like the way fast travel works, like Bonto said. It's just weird to like Westerners, right? And that just means that it's cool and interesting and different in a way that I'm excited about, because I get bored with games that are all samey a lot, and that's cool. But the downside is that, as is usually the case with a lot of like Eastern games and especially Eastern RPGs and Capcom games, is that it's pretty janky and just does things in a weird way and doesn't seem streamlined. And sometimes you're like, that is so odd. But if you're open to that level of jank, you know, kind of opening the door for like interesting and new stuff that you haven't done in other RPGs, then it's really cool. I think Dragon's Dogma, the original, did that really well. And Dragon Dogma 2, from what I've played so far, which is not a ton, a couple hours, I think is really interesting. And it comes out tomorrow. I'm going to play it with my fiance once she finishes beating Dragon's Dogma 1. She's partway through it right now. So that'll be fun.
But it's not solo? Yeah. Or she's just going to watch?
She's playing it alone. And I've already beat it.
I beat it
when it came out in 2012. So yeah, she's playing it alone. But yeah, we're going to play it like in the same room. It's a single player game, but we're going to
I did that. So my wife's not a gamer at all, but she really likes the BioShock universe. Like, she read the books.
Great games.
And so I did that with her. Like, I sat there and like watched her play the BioShock games, and watching like a non-gamer interact with a game. Your wife seems like more of a gamer, Travis. But watching a non-gamer interact with a world like that is so interesting, because they'll approach it like it's more like a book or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And we have
gamer sensibilities. You play enough games, you kind of understand how
intuition.
Yeah, gamer. Yeah, I mean, you understand how things are kind of expected to work, and you would do this, and you put a non-gamer down there, like, you know exactly where they're supposed to go, but the game may not quite say it in the way that they get it. And you're going, it's right over there, but it's not coming through. And it is interesting.
Why the yellow paint exists.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
For those who haven't built intuition yet. And it's also based on genre. Like Scarrow, I bet, has tons of gamer intuition for first person games, but I bet you some of the third person stuff would like not.
I really don't like third person stuff. So I'm like, it's like, with the exception of Dead Space and Fortnite and Outriders, like, I don't even know, like, a third person.
Right now, Outriders?
Right now,
I loved Outriders because of all the secrets and puzzles and stuff. That and the replayability.
Outriders is underrated.
I totally agree. It was really good. It got a lot of success. I think a lot more than they were expecting.
I played it for a bit. What ended up killing it? Just not a lot of content?
I mean, it wasn't live service.
It's very much like a Borderlands model. So I think they're coming out with new stuff soon, right, E? Like, they've been teasing stuff.
Outriders? I mean, no. I mean,
I said Outriders, but I meant the, Revenant is what I meant.
Oh, Revenant was fantastic, yes.
Yeah,
Revenant
Outriders was fine.
Service. And they have some DLC coming out this year.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Remnant, I really liked. Outriders was fine. The combat didn't, especially the gunplay. This is my problem with most third-person games, is like, gunplay usually doesn't really feel that good. Dead Space is a clear exception to that, in my opinion. Everything feels really heavy and good in that universe. And I think in Remnant, everything was unique enough where it felt really good.
Yeah, Remnant's fantastic. We both played that.
9 out of 10 IGN. Also an IGN first game I produced. Awesome.
Yeah, Outriders was good. I like the story approach for Outriders, but I don't think it. I'm not sure it.
Yeah, there were systems it did though. Did you play it, G? Outriders.
I played Outriders for a bit. I want to say I got a free demo or something. I saw when it came out, people weren't like, it looks cool, but it looked more like play it once, get off of it.
Yeah, that was my impression.
Yeah, Outriders died when they
easily the best.
Yeah, Outriders died when they nerfed the builds. That's the problem with a PvE game coming out and then like balancing things for some, that's always a weird move when they make like single player or PvE games, like nerfing builds and stuff like that. That doesn't seem practical in a way. But on the other side, the way you were able to pull perks off weapons and then combine them and have some of the most ridiculous combinations of weapons in Outriders, that was really, really fun. And just the transparent, like transmog, you see it, it's unlocked forever. Just
yeah,
it's the quality of life stuff after you come from Destiny. You're like, come on, They knocked this out of the park. It's not that hard, kind of.
Like, their marketing was awesome, too. Yeah. Like, they got, like, Bring Me the Horizon to, with a huge band to, like, promote a lot of it and stuff. They used their music, and it was good. Like, it was good. I just think it didn't have the staying power. It felt very much like an anthem to me, whereas something like Remnant feels, I think it's a bit more unique and special. Yeah. And I think
The fact that one of the subclasses was buried the way it was fantastic. I love
that. And they
secret.
Did that with the first DLC. They did something like that too, right? Like with a gun or something. I think they did. I played a little bit.
I previewed that DLC. What a great game.
Yeah, it's good. I'm glad it was as successful as it was, and I hope that they lean more into that, because like the replayability of like the campaign structure, genius idea.
Yep.
And all of the like moving puzzles and like optional things. Like what a beautiful combination of mechanics. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I played the first one years ago, and then when the second one was coming out, I think Travis probably was on it quicker than I was, but I knew it was one I wanted to get into because the first was so good, and they to knock a sequel out as well as they did to take basically everything up a notch is rare to do it all very well again and then some, and I was like totally
especially
blown away.
With their size of team, they're small,
they're not huge.
They're
in Austin, right?
Yeah, they're in Austin, Gunfire Games.
Yep.
They're under Embracer now.
Oh, I was about to say, if there's a plan to do a third game, I bet it'll be really big, but
I think Embracer. Right now they're focusing on DLC and expansion. Yep. Stay tuned to IGN.com for more.
Oh, let's go. Okay. Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, I really like that game.
It's great. It's a really good game. Speaking of not liking variety, Scaro, I'm currently playing a game. I'm reviewing a game right now that is a real-time strategy, a tower defense game, a base building and base management game, and a first-person shooter.
At the same time?
And an RPG, kind of.
Are these different modes or like all at simultaneously?
All at the same time. They just.
What the fuck?
Yeah. They just throw it all together.
There's one.
throw
it all together in a big stew, of ideas. And they say, eat that. Here's more tutorials 50 hours into the game. Play
no
more. Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, man. Keep me updated on this one because that's.
I will. I'll let you know when that review is going to go live on Monday alongside my South Park Snow Day review. I think they're going live at the same time.
Is it South Park Snow Day?
No, it is not. It is not. You will see my thoughts on South Park Snow Day next week.
Did you like Stick of Truth?
I love Stick of Truth.
Okay. What about the Fractured Butthole?
Fractured Butthole, I think, is not as good, but still pretty damn good. I mean, the first South Park Stick of Truth was made by Obsidian.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's an Obsidian RPG. I think that was the best we were ever going to do. Fractured Butthole is good. I also played the mobile game, Phone Destroyer, which is kind of like a spin-off.
I didn't even know there was a mobile game.
Yeah, it's in the same. And this is a direct sequel to that. And they went a very different direction with it. It's not backed by Ubisoft. It's made by pretty much an independent studio, a smaller studio. And it's third-person kind of hack-and-slash gameplay with some light roguelike stuff. And, you know, they try a bunch of new stuff. I can't say more than that. But
of course.
You'll see my opinion.
This is very different than the other two, then? Other two
were... Very, very different. The other two were turn-based RPGs.
Right?
And they also looked like South Park. They were like 2D art that looked like it was made out of scrap paper, you know. And this is a 3D modeled like game,
over the shoulder.
So they completely changed everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, we might want to talk about what we had on the cover of the podcast today.
Clickbait. Let's go.
Clickbait. Yeah.
Clickbait.
Burying the lead a little bit there. That's fine. So in the world of Destiny, we actually probably have been playing a little bit. Travis is, for the video edition, you guys are probably looking at Travis in a weird way right now. He is holding tiny little figurines. But G, did you get one too?
Nah, no? I did not.
Okay. Oh. Well, three of the four of us received a collector's edition a little early. So thank you, Bungie, for the collector's edition. For Final Shape. And
hashtag Bungie Creator.
Appreciate that.
Yep.
And Everybody kind of opened them. There were a ton of unboxing pictures and videos and all that stuff because everybody actually had an embargo for this thing. Kind of funny to see one of those because I don't know if they've done one quite like this before for a promotion. So this is a first time I've seen sending these things out to creators. And yeah. I saw, I think it was like Aotera got one in Australia. Yeah. And then I saw like UK got some as well. So they were sending them out. Yeah,
Jarv, I think, got one.
Fife has been diving into lore, which we'll talk about. But I just kind of want to talk to you guys about what's actually in the box. So Travis,
wait, before we do that, I just want to give a little bit of a hot take. I'm very grateful Bungie sent this out. But I think sending them out early is a mistake because a big part of at least what I like about Collector's Edition, solving the puzzles as a community. And this stuff was solved like days before. I mean, like we got ours a week before they even shipped to the public. So it's just like, I didn't really like that personally.
I was going to say, I feel like they can't win though, because I've had a point where they all ship out from the same place, depending on how close you are to the shipping facility. Yeah. And if I get it later and then you've got a video post, I'm like, I don't even have mine yet.
Yeah. And so that's always going to suck. But at least at that point, like usually someone in Raid Secrets will like scan everything. And then we're all in a VC solving stuff. This is a very niche thing that affects like 20 people. That's perfectly fine. You know what I mean? But it's like, one of my favorite times of the year is like in there solving the emblems and the, usually there's an ARG, there wasn't for Lightfall, and it really doesn't look like there is for Final Shape, which sucks, but I hope I'm wrong. And that's like my favorite is like just getting greasy with those guys and gals over there. But because they sent out a week early. Sorry?
What are the coupons for?
That's an excellent question because
that's gotta be a puzzle, right?
Yeah, I don't. So I looked through all of them. They all look identical. I tried. So barcodes are usually some form of binary. That's for an emblem. That's for the Gone Home emblem.
Yeah. That's the spicy ramen tickets.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to take one of those to GCX.
I was just showing the package it came.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I'm going to take those to GCX. And if they try to charge me $40 for ramen again, I'm going to give them one of those.
I mean, you should. Like, yeah. If it's ever going to count anywhere.
Yeah, but they're all identical, and they give you, like, 20 of them.
Yeah, it's a
weird... So, yeah, I feel like this has got to be something.
I agree. I have no idea, though. But, like I said, as far as I could tell, the barcode doesn't decode into anything. So, I mean, I was...
identical barcodes.
Yeah, and it's identical. The barcodes are identical to the picture in the book and to the ramen coupons that we've had in the past of Destiny. So, they're not different. So I don't know. Mm. It's so weird. It's such a weird thing to include, especially 50 weird. Of them, you know, or
yeah,
20
it's not
or
like
or
a few like, oh, this is yeah. kind of cute. It's like, no, it's there's a packet of them of like 20 or 30. It's ridiculous very in odd. There. So,
so you've got I don't mind that they sent it early, but I also have no stake in the little community minigame. So
like I said, I acknowledge that's a very like very niche thing that is.
Yeah.
Kinda,
to me, it was nice to kind of just dive back in before.
I do.
Before I start to review this thing.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, the item we're talking about first is the yearbook that they sent, which is like got all of these autographs from different people in the Destiny universe and even some photos that you can pull out. And they're like Polaroids, basically.
And it's like leather bound. It's got like that's honestly one of the coolest collector's edition things I think we've gotten from Destiny. I like it more than the tower by a lot.
And it does also, the thing I wanted to compliment them about on this entire package is it does feel like, you know, it's like you're graduating. Like it's kind of graduating from high school themed, which
it's
is
like the literal yearbook.
You have a literal yearbook. You have, and it's also, you know, it's the end of the Darkness and the Light saga, and we're all graduating to whatever's next for Destiny. And I think that was a pretty cool send off. Although very dorky,
but it was cool. There were a lot of like lore callbacks in there. There were a couple puzzles in there.
There's one. It's like messages from all the secret agents or hidden agents
from
or something.
The hidden.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to see. Yeah. Like the kids' drawings in there. I'm wondering if they actually had like developers' kids be like just pulled drawings off the fridge kind of thing.
Yeah, I'd put money on that, dude.
Yeah,
for sure.
It looked like some of those. The maze in the front was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little stuff in there, and then just it looks like legit signatures. So there's probably some dev signatures in there. It looks like for sure. So just kind of a really unique piece of memorabilia, especially after 10 years. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you got that one. We've got, do you want to talk about the lore, like the intelligentsia, or do you want to talk about the tower? Which would you prefer, Travis?
Let's do Scarrow stuff first.
You want to talk about the lore?
The lore? Okay, I don't want to get like too much into it. Every collector's edition, there's at least one, usually between one and three lore books. Sorry. Some of the best lore in all of Destiny are in these collector's edition books. They definitely bring on like a philosopher to write them. The previous best one was Beyond Light, and it was like Clovis Bray's journey and his, you know, point of view and stuff. Terrifying. This is now the best one by a lot, and it goes into the origins of the Witness, the motivations of the Witness. Very nihilistic, very philosophical, very sadistic. Excellent story. Like, and it's just a collection of stories of people dying at the hands of the Witness and how he kills different races in different ways and how he wants some people to suffer and how, you know, and stuff like that. Just brutal stories, and just a beautiful piece of lore all around, which is a real, this is like this whole thing of Ido, because all this is from the perspective of Ido, Mithrax's daughter, going around the solar system and collecting artifacts. To learn more about the Witness and the Witness's race. This is what Season of the Deep should have been. So instead of us learning what we did from a whale, it should have been us going around finding artifacts and learning this, these proper motivations. Like, this is everyone who says like the Witness isn't well developed, it doesn't make any sense. Like, this is the lore that has been missing, and it is very compelling, in my opinion.
I will stand on the ground that the Witness isn't well developed, because I think the only development that matters is how he's developed in the game.
That's exactly, like, I agree. If this lore was in game, it would be completely different if this lore was in the game.
People who defend Destiny for having a good story have to go through a lot of hoops and reference a lot of grimoire and things that aren't actually in the game, or things that are buried in menus upon menus within the game and are really hard to access. And I just don't think that that's a great way to give the story. And I think they often abandon the grimoire entries when it's suited for whatever cutscene they're putting into the actual game. And so,
yeah, I feel like they oversimplify the in-game lore a lot to the point where it kind of negates a lot of the more complex grimoire.
Yeah.
And I think this is a great example of that.
If they need to create a Neo Muna in defiance of all the lore that they've established, they will do that. And that kind of, it just goes a long way to undermine the work that they've done in setting up that world building. And the fact that none of that is in the game, I think, I'm worried that none of this is going to make it to the final shape, because I don't even know how it could. Like, a lot of it is like backstory. And the answer that they gave us in the game about how the Witness was created, I found was unsatisfactory.
Did you read this?
I've read maybe half of it.
Okay.
I haven't gotten all the way through it yet.
Yeah.
So I think it's well written and cool, but I still don't think it gives me a great answer for, like, I get what the Witness wants, but I kind of feel like we've all kind of understood that. It's more like the Witness's creation and their final goal. I still feel like we're a little bit murky on. And so if they're able to
discussed in the back half of this.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So it's like, do you care for spoilers? I can recap it very generally.
Sure. Recap it. Yeah.
So it's the Witness, they were blessed by the Traveler, their race. And they all developed this. They're kind of a race that they use ternary structure for like ideas. So they'll like say, instead of the final shape, it was like the summit, the Pyramidion, the final shape. And they would describe everything in these kind of three word structures. And that sort of represents a conflict of ideologies within their race. And then as they determine like the most final form of something, that'll shrink down from three words to one. And so essentially what happens is you have a lot of dissenting it was two main dissenting factions in the Witness's kind of race, and they all agreed that they need to reach a state called the final shape, but they disagreed what that was and the method to get there. And so they want everything to reach the final shape, but half of them believe that they should be able to use violence to force something to achieve their final shape. You know, the ends justify the means, versus the other half that doesn't. And eventually what happens is the half that believes that violence to the final shape is the answer murders all the rest of them, and then merges themselves into the Witness, and then forgets all of their history on purpose. And so it's like they the whole idea is you erase your wrongdoings to make it essentially so it never happened. And their entire goal is to force this final shape on everything, which is, and the idea, like what that is also evolved. So it started off as like, they had a way to like look at essentially future timelines. And it's like, okay, we just need to speed up the process to get this thing to what it will be. And now the idea of the final shape is what is left when everything that can die does. And so it's like very, it has become increasingly more nihilistic as it is gone. And it is increasingly leaning into this, the end justifies the means type of thing. And then when the Traveler left it, because it was trying to force the final shape, now anything that the Witness has blessed or you know, given treasures to or whatever, it just wants that stuff to suffer as much as possible.
You mean the Traveler?
What did I say? Sorry.
The Witness.
The Traveler. Anything the Traveler, like us and the Fallen, the Witness just wants to torture them. It just wants them to feel as much pain as possible. And so it's describing, like, the Witness, like, during the collapse, using inefficient attacks on humanity because it just wants them to suffer. It could wipe us all out. It could go to the Traveler. It doesn't even have to interact with us. But it's, like, drawing out and torturing us because it hates us, pretty much. And it wants to get our attention and, like, force our... It wants us to come to the same conclusions that it has, that the final shape is better... because look at all this pain you can experience. You don't have to experience it.
Well, it's going to take the time to like shove the bamboo under the fingernails because it's not going to kill you. It's just going to hurt like hell.
Yeah. And then it wants you to admit that life, that death is better than life because you can experience this pain that it's forcing you to experience is essentially my takeaway. It's very philosophical and nihilistic.
It's dark.
Very deep. It's very dark.
Yeah.
It was a great read. I just wish they had a way to, once again, I think this lore is a lot more impactful if more people experience it in the game, right?
Do you feel that it's almost too dark to put in the game?
I think it's not necessarily too dark. I think it's too complex.
I don't think it's too dark either. I think it's too complex.
Like, the way it's presented is too complex, in my opinion. If you put it as is into the game, I think 90% of people are going to completely miss the point or not even care or just brush past it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't put it in the form of, like, stories and research by a scholarly elixir, but I think you can have a character that states their point of view, and especially if you have essentially 2 years of Witness buildup, wherein the Witness could at any point talk or be in, you know, voiceover, radio sequences, yada yada. You can build that up, and I think somebody else who had a really complicated backstory was the Witch Queen, Savathun.
Yeah.
And I think they did that really well. They like used their time well to build up what her philosophy was and what her abilities were and all that stuff. And I feel like we don't really have any of that for the Witness. Even some of the, like the stuff that he does, like, you know, turning the Guardians into Swiss cheese. When
they explain that too. That's cool.
I know they do explain that. I got to that part, but
what happens there? Like, you got to tell us. Like,
the Witnesses, what the Witness does to achieve the final shape, it will disassemble things with the hope of reconfiguring them in their final shape. But the idea is the darkness can only destroy, and it needs the light to rebuild, to reconfigure. And so when it's slicing things apart, it's attempting to disassemble and reassemble, but it doesn't have the power to reassemble to make that final shape, which is why it's pursuing the Traveler, because it needs the Traveler, the thing it hates the most, to gain the power to reassemble, to build, which is what light does.
It needs its yin to its yang.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's the thing that about me, I actually don't know that the Witness's philosophy, at least so far as I've gotten in the lore book, is nihilistic. It's almost like weird, like, conservationist, like preservationist philosophy of like things that are dead can't feel pain, but you still want them to exist, which is why I guess the pyramid ships are all like big museums, right? It's kind of like preserving their culture and their history, but non-living.
Yeah.
But also the witness doesn't believe in death, which is another thing that is kind of like a contrast, because, you know, the philosophy they've told us in game is no more life, no more death. We're going to have this thing in between. The final shape is going to be unlife, whatever.
Which
what's the pitch black? What is the after? What did they call it in that? You know what I'm talking about? And what was it? Chronicles of Riddick.
Get out?
No, Chronicles of Riddick. It was like they were kind of doing the same thing. They were trying to basically just annihilate, you know, colonies and collect these people, but it was like they were trying to go to the afterlife or afterverse. It was, I forget the name of it, but it was kind of, yeah, I gotcha.
I find it interesting
I think in the game it risks an oversimplification that's going to be like, oh, 100%. The witness wants to kill everything and the traveler wants to life everything. And
yeah.
It's life v death. And I think that's probably what it's going to be. And I think a lot of the lore in the book is pushing it that way of like, oh, the witness just wants to kill everything. But I kind of perceived that they had set up a more nuanced take on what the witness actually wants to accomplish. And it seems like maybe they're backtracking on that a little bit.
It feels very Dead Spacey to me, where they really just want to push everything towards a one final, like the Brethren Moon type of thing in Dead Space. It's like, it's very that.
The Brethren Moon. I was not expecting you to reference Dead Space 3, but there you go.
Yeah. Well, look, for all its faults, the lore of Dead Space 3 is incredible. The gameplay wasn't great, and going that far that fast is like, eh. But that's like probably my favorite lore universe ever is the Dead Space universe. I love that. Just the idea. I find it interesting how many sci-fi properties, like their end goal is always like a hive mind, you know, like the Flood, the Necromorphs, the Witness. There's a really cool passage in this lore book where the Witness comes across another like collective mind ether species. And it's from the point of view of like a single member of the species, and it can feel other members being ripped apart and re-put together as part of the witness, like one by one. And this last surviving member of this other species disconnects itself from the hive mind, and it can still hear the witness like taunting it in its mind. And the witness is actually like really nice to it. It's really disturbing. And it's like, oh, don't, you know, it's very Thanos-y where it's like, don't fear. This is what you need, you know. And so like,
I bring you salvation as
exactly
Ebony Maw or whatever is
exactly. And it's such like a sadistic, like sociopathic take on it. It's a great. It's only like a couple pages, but it's probably my favorite part of the book. It's a great look at it.
Again, just a shame that it's not in the game. That's pretty much. Agree. It
it's yeah, and like it's I like, said, like it should.
I will push back against the idea that it can't exist in the game. I think you can have nuanced stories.
Maybe they'll hopefully.
Lots of developers do it. I even think that, you know, Bungie has done it before in some of their past games. I don't think it always has to be, you know, the. And I actually think we got there or really close to it with the Witch Queen. I think her philosophy and some of the stuff they put in the game of like the historical lie from the worms and the conversation with the traveler, like that was all almost like straight out of the grimoire, and the reaction was super positive.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why the there were parts of the grimoire or the lore in this collector's edition that I've read so far that scare me a little bit, because they make me think that they're kind of backtracking and trying to make it less nuanced and more like, oh, the witness is evil and just wants to kill everything, which, you know, we didn't really have motivations for the witness so far, but I feel like they were setting up something that was a little bit less, you know, on the nose.
Yeah.
Than that,
I agree. I think this should have been Season of the Deep. Instead of talking to some giant space whale, we go around collecting artifacts and we get more like slight glimpses into this ideology, where they can be a little bit more refined and more complex. And then at the end of the season, you find the final artifact, and that's like that awesome cutscene that we got in game.
Was it awesome?
I think it was. I personally loved it. Maybe it didn't go far enough, but in terms of like Destiny cutscenes, and especially in seasons, yeah, it was awesome. So
I thought it was a pretty bad answer for like how the witness's origins, right? And also, it didn't explain anything about the. What was the artifact from Lightfall? Why have I already forgotten?
The veil. That's Plunder. That's Plunder. That's not Deep. I think having like these entries in this book as part of that season, I think that all builds up to that as a better and helps form that story a little better. But like, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, pretend I know the perfect way to do it, but I think it's just a shame like all the Clovis lore wasn't in the game. I think it's a shame that this lore wasn't in the game. With Witch Queen, I think there was three books, and one of them was like describing what stasis was And I think that is just a beautiful thing that should have been in the game. Like, they clearly, like, either someone on the narrative team has a philosophy degree or they hire a philosopher to help write these, but they're always super deep and really thoughtful and interesting insights into things. And it's just such a shame that, like, 1% of people will ever read it, you know?
Yeah.
And I do think you can put that in the game, but I think they often eschew it for like cutscenes of Rocky Balboa training montages and
yeah,
stuff that like
yeah.
absolutely doesn't need to be in the game. And I get it, because it's sort of like lowest common denominator. They're speaking to a really wide audience with these, but I don't know. I think Witch Queen should have proved to them that they can tell more complicated, nuanced stories and not get a lot of blowback, and the reception will be pretty positive. Because even if you don't understand what's happening in a game because you haven't been following all the seasons and stuff, mm-hmm. when you see a cutscene where something weird happens, it starts a conversation, especially since this is a multiplayer game where you're often playing it in chat with friends. You could be like, why is this happening? And then your friend goes, oh, you didn't play last season? Well, this happened, and it kind of... It kicks off a conversation that I think could be cool, and you can kind of have your players do some of the work for you. Mm. And I'm increasingly becoming nervous that this ending is sort of just going to be like a, you know, the witness is bad, wants to kill everything. The traveler wants to make everything be alive. Got to kill the witness. The end.
That
to me won't be very satisfying.
What I'm really hoping is the raid, since we can wield the dark and the light, I'm really hoping that we, through the raid mechanics, make the witness achieve its final shape. We disassemble and reassemble it and mess it up. You know what I mean? Like, whatever cool. lore. The raid mechanics, for you know, as simple as a lot of the lore is, the raid mechanics always are really deep, actually. Like, the way they're named and the things that we're actually doing, they're always very clever and very, like, lore accurate and narratively accurate. So I think that sort of thing would be really awesome. I was going to say it's a real shame, because I think some of the most like complex, interesting lore that we've had this year is the unveiling lore, which is what the veil is. But it's literally like, go sit in front of this computer monitor on the bottom of Neomuna every week. Yeah. And there's no interesting way to get it. And I think that's some of the most interesting lore. And we have a lot of answers for like, what is the veil? Why does it exist? What is this MacGuffin? You know,
not good answers, though.
Interesting answers. Interesting enough. A lot more interesting than look at this. Callous.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean?
I think you can promise to answer questions and then the players can say, okay, but I don't like that answer.
I think that's
fair. Totally fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think in reality, I don't think a year ago or 2 years ago, the veil was ever supposed to exist. Right. And I think they had to retcon a lot of that. And I think the witness's motivations probably haven't changed all that much, but I think they had to make the veil work, you know?
I think the witness has changed. I think you can see it in the writing. I think the grimoire sort of this lore entry we got, I think this sort of confirms that they've pivoted a little bit in the way that the witness is approaching its methodology.
I wonder if that's
a question for G, since he has been ultra.
Yeah, sorry.
You're good.
I was going to say, like, how into the lore are you? I couldn't remember. I know when we had you on before, if you were into it or not, or if it's just, you're like, I don't even care. How are you looking at Final Shape, whether you are or aren't into the lore? Do you just like, I'm going to figure out the mechanics and play the game? Or are you more curious about the story or in between?
I'm definitely more interested in the mechanics and stuff. Just play the game. But yeah, I don't know. I've never been one for stories. I've always skipped cutscenes type of thing. But I think with D2, I played since D1. All the lore is Grimoire cards. I wasn't wasting my time going online doing that because I was in high school. I had better things to do usually and didn't really want to read. So, and then now it's to the point where I feel like Bungie, and again, I'm somebody who doesn't understand storylines or lore, but my take is just, I feel like they can do whatever they want. So they can kind of change the story on a whim. So it doesn't really have any meaning or real weight compared to a story or a book that was thought out and has meaning from its inception. So I'd love to see a good ending to it. But really, I just pray that the witness, we take him down or whatever happens, it's a cool raid. It's a good tie off to the light darkness saga. And that's basically it. But
and you are the underlying players, things, probably.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I think most people just want a satisfying ending. I don't know that just killing the witness is a satisfying ending, but.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with that either. Yeah,
I'm open to be being proven wrong, but I think the issue with me is that 10 years of buildup for this great finale, I think you have to have some surprise in there. And if the answer to it is like a straightforward trip to Mordor and then we kill the big bad guy, that to me will just feel like, well, how is that any different than the fight against Kallus? How is that any different than the fight against...
If I feel, if we kill the witness and I feel the way I felt after we killed Kallus, I'm going to be very disappointed. Kallus to me was a bit of a punk.
I don't think they'll whiff that badly, but I'm just worried that it's not gonna. I'm worried that it's going to be feel less good than the Witch Queen, because the Witch Queen had two major plot twists and a really cool fight and a perfect ending that had to like send off that character. And I just think they nailed the story there.
And the tease for the Witness, our first look at was cool.
Yeah.
I'm
worried that they're not going to get there. I just based on what I've read,
War,
and I'm just worried, man.
I compare Destiny's storytelling a lot to the TV show Supernatural, which I don't know if you guys have ever seen, but it's
what you're talking about.
There's like a big bad. So like for the first couple of seasons, like demons were like the worst thing ever and nothing else existed. And then they beat the demons and then it was like, oh, the devil's real. And then they beat the devil and then there's like a new bad guy. And then eventually they like kill God. And I think like that's like, I think that's the Destiny. We're going to kill the witness or whatever. And then I think it's going to be like, oh, but now we have to deal with the elder gods or whatever. And
that's where the nine come in. And
yeah, exactly.
And you can just
Nine are very similar in a way because they are also like a disembodied hive mind, which is Bungie's favorite end game thing that they've done 100 times with the Flood and the Witness and this other, I forget the name of the race in the book.
Yeah.
Where's the Flood?
Halo?
From Halo.
I've always thought the nine were bad.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't play it. Okay.
Oh, okay. The Flood were pretty much... Have you played Dead Space? They're pretty much the Necromorphs from Dead Space. Oh, well.
They're in Halo.
You said Halo. Flood, and I thought we were on Destiny still, and I was like, dude.
No, it's just Bungie.
I definitely don't know the lore.
It's a trope that Bungie loves. It's essentially like a zombie virus that it'll take things over and make it part of its giant hive mind, and it grows and grows and grows, and it's unstoppable.
By the way, the lore behind the Flood, I don't know if you guys have read the Forerunner trilogy of books, but they are like Dune level hard sci-fi world building, like some of the best written science fiction you can find. And it's just like this side story to basically set up the second trilogy of the Halo games. Like it's such a random, like that I've read all of the Halo books. Yes. There's like 50 of them. I've read them all. I'm a psychopath. the quality swings so wildly. Some of them are like pulp dime store novel, just like bullshit action stories. And then some of them are like super elevated science fiction, like really, really well written. And you're like, God damn, your mileage may vary with those books. But yeah, I think Bungie's had this really great world building ability. And they've always had kind of a, I wouldn't say trouble succeeding at putting that in their games, because I think Halo, especially Halo 2, just knocks it out of the park with putting it in the game. And I think that's why that game has aged so well. But I think they're hit or miss with actually incorporating their world building into the game in a digestible manner. So. Yeah.
And that's why I thought this Sony thing was going to be great, because if you have other mediums to do this, but they're clearly
terrible
not doing
idea.
Yeah.
What? Well, you don't
terrible.
Think like
no, we're not going to rehash this whole thing again.
Oh,
so,
sorry.
You know,
I
no,
thought
that's...
I, as a person who gets really invested in franchises, as we've already established, I would love multimedia stuff like the Destiny comics that they did at one point. Loved those.
I mean,
personally.
I would love to see it too, but it seems like right now that is such a.
That's not going to happen.
At this point.
To be clear, Scarrow, my issue isn't with multimedia. My issue is with selling your soul so that you can drop a hot single on.
Yes. Okay.
That's my problem.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, before we get to the final shape, we got to see a little preview this week for Into the Light. And interesting thoughts happened on Twitter. And I know there was even some interesting thoughts on my chat kind of going both directions. So I kind of wanted to, if you're comfortable, do you want to kind of tell us what we saw for, mainly we got to see the activity. So we have three streams.
Wait, we didn't get to discuss this just really quickly.
Okay,
this
fine.
Also
we
came
also
with the
got a tower.
Edition.
Sorry. We had a lore book rabbit hole.
Yeah. We had a lore book rabbit hole, but the collector's edition also came with a tower. It also has a Zavala and a Korra thing. And there was a minor puzzle to this. It lights up and there's talking and it's cool. I'm curious to see if anybody's going to find any other secrets with this, because there is one secret, but My fiance and I deciphered it in about 25 seconds and found it. And so I'm wondering if there's more to this, and I'm interested to see how the community dissects that little piece of it. But yeah, just to cap that
off. The two little figurines, one's Ikora, one's Zavala, and you get little voices. And unfortunately, it's like yesterday was like the 1 year anniversary or something when Lance Riddick passed away. And then I put the little thing on there and I heard his voice again. And he's like, "We're always with you, Guardian," or something he said. I was like, it fit really well for him not being.
It gave him a line of like, "I'm dead," but you know.
Yeah, and it was just like, damn, that one hit. So it was just, it's a really good line to kind of, and it is an iconic piece. For me, it was just cool. That was the reason I hadn't bought it yet, but I was like, of all the collector's editions I've gotten, 10 years, we have been hanging around in some tower or another for 10 years. Yeah. So that is kind of why it was a piece of, it's 10 years. It's a quarter of my life at this point. And for some people, it's more than a quarter. So it's been something iconic. So that's why it's like, for me, the actual tower, I mean, the light up's cool and the voices are cool and the little, you know, hidden thing is kind of fitting for that. But it's like, when I kind of look on the shelf, like Savathun, very legitimate. The ones who have like the big Witch Queen one.
We're going to go back in Final Shape.
So I saw somebody talk about that, man. I swear in one of the streams or.
Yeah. On Tuesday, they're announcing a new social space. They've already confirmed this. And we already know at the start of. No, I would put money on it that it's going to be in the tower. There's no way.
So that's why I said new social
and
space.
Because look, they also, we already know that the tower is a big part of the set space for the Pale Heart. Like, they already rebuilt it in the new engine. Come on, it's going to be announced. It'll probably be some weird thing,
They have a ribbon cutting ceremony.
I would be floored if on Tuesday we don't. I mean, they have already confirmed. They confirmed it on Tuesday, this last Tuesday.
Is it social space this Tuesday or the following?
Yeah, like, social space and rewards Tuesday. Yep.
That's why wanted all of the promotion to come right before it. That makes actual sense.
Yep, and I guarantee we go into the light. You go to the new tower. That's where you interact with Shax, who is dealing with Onslaught, not Crucible Shax.
I was wondering about that. That makes more sense actually, because I was like, how many pages? And he's gonna have two reputation circles.
Yeah.
Are you gonna have to?
The new reputation is called Hype, which is cool.
Are you gonna have to go to another social space just to interact with the same guy to go to a different activity, like?
Kind of seems like it.
Or are they going to move everybody over there and you've got access to everything?
No. So now we'll you have different,
two different hubs. We have the helm. So we have three different hubs now that we have to go to. So
I don't think they'll sunset the old tower. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they'll have a separate hub for separate
four,
people.
Four, the helm. You didn't even talk about the helm. Well, four social spaces.
The helm.
Yeah. Well, the farm doesn't exist anymore. Does it?
Yeah, it's in the game.
It is! Oh my god!
Yeah, and nobody uses it, but it's technically there.
Yeah, they should combine it.
Are you a farm denier, bro?
Sorry?
You're a farm denier?
I forgot it existed.
The farm exists, bro?
Because they sunset it and then they brought it back, right?
We just need the farm as a skate park.
Yeah, they brought it back for Defiance. That's what it was. What they should do is, if they bring back the old tower, which I'd bet money that they are. There should be like a connection to the current Destiny 2 tower, where maybe they're not in the same instance, but you can like go walk up to a door and it'll take you to the
or
other
a portal
one
to pass between or something. Yeah, we have the technology for portals.
You don't like that?
I love it. It's not going to happen.
Oh, okay. I would love it. Like, you know how the helm's like its own instance bubble, and that makes things open really fast. It would be cool if like the new. If you could access that from the tower and you just walk through a portal and then boom, you're in your own instance. So I don't have to fly out and
would
fly
love
back
that.
In. Yeah.
Never going to happen.
Never going to happen.
So besides all of the stuff that we think is going to happen, we actually saw the new activity and kind of wanted to get your take on it. G, if you feel comfortable explaining it, I will just kind of pass it to you.
Explaining the just the activity?
Yeah, just the thoughts. Activity. Yeah, if you can't explain the activity, go for it, because I feel like you've been very patient. So I kind
of
want to give you some time. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've basically been asking for it for years. I know I have been. It's basically, I guess the best way to put it into a single word is a horde mode. Looks like a wave defense system. You're defending this thing called the ADU, I believe. I think it's like automated defense units.
Yep.
You protect that. You earn currency as you're killing, scaling up waves in difficulty. And then you're getting that currency and you can buy traps, upgrade traps, things like that. And then there's also some other points, I guess, of engagement. I think every five or every fifth level of a wave, so wave 5, wave 15, 25, you go in and you do something with a spark inside of a pyramid ship. You come back out, do 5 more levels, and then on 10, 20, 30, things like that, you have a boss to go and fight, and then you come back. And that ADU on every 10th wave will shift to a new location, set up new points of defenses, new traps, and things like that. And then I think every 10th level, we're getting difficulty scalers. So just kind of push to see how high you can go. I think it caps at 50. There's a playlist casual mode so that you can just do 10 waves really quick with other people. And then I believe there's also a master mode or a legend mode or something like that as well.
Yeah. So that pretty well summed it up. I think you kind of knocked out all the high points. Very quick and succinct. What do you think about it?
Dude, I was watching the reveal and I was, like I said, I've been asking, I found an old video that I posted like summer of 2022 asking for Horde mode. I've wanted it for so long because Bungie's had an issue, I think, with just making replayable content for the player base. And I've always said a Horde mode would be the perfect thing because I think people love the game. They love the way it feels, love the guns, gameplay, build cycle, loops, all that. There's just nothing to do, really. That's really fun to just consistently brain-numbingly grind. So at first, I was really hyped.
Yeah. You don't do strike so many times.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, dude, I used to grind strikes in D1, but D2, they're just not fun. I don't know. Maybe different
it's
mindset.
It's been 10 years and they
were never fun.
There's no mechanics, just, right?
The novelty is worn off for sure.
Yeah.
I could grind him in high school back in the day, but that was it. But I think Bungie went a little too far, at least for my liking, with the Horde mode. It feels too locked into a Bungie type activity rather than just like a casual Horde mode. So I have my issues with it, but we'll see how it comes out.
What's rubbing you the wrong way at least from just the preview?
The main things, the big one is the level 50 cap. I think it should be infinite. That's a hard one to get past. I hope they change it. And if they do, it'll be, I think, 10x better. And then other niche things, I don't really like going into the pyramid ship. They added Rift, where you take the spark and you go deposit it. It looks, for lack of a better term, so stupid in my opinion. And then you're also disrupting the wave defense to go in and kill a boss. I think it's much more enjoyable in other Horde modes just to have those things happen naturally. Just make it a boss wave, make the boss spawn in, kill that. I don't like the break in action to go into this thing. It just feels much more like your typical seasonal activity. I'd really like to just turn my brain off, sit down, bunker down, kill tons of waves, make it scale until I can't play anymore. It's way too hard. And then some of the other decisions I think are more opinion based, but I wish that you could have that option to just sit at. I wish you could sit at a single spot and really just bunker down rather than teleport to a bunch of different locations. But I think most of it could be summed up as I wish they gave us more control over how we play rather than funnel you into a specific way to play, if that makes sense.
That's fair. Scaro, I know you've had some thoughts about it as well. I was curious your take.
I think it's cool. And I think more than anything, I think it's a good foundation. Like Coil
stole the words from me here, but yeah, that's
fine. Sorry.
No.
I think Coil's a really great example of how they can take like an idea and evolve on it. So it's got the roguelike elements of deep dives, but I think Coil's like perfected. Like it's awesome. My main hope is this sort of thing. And I made a tweet about this. So maybe some people have seen this. I think like this and Dares of Eternity are great examples of activities that shouldn't just be activities. I think they should be made core playlists. I think they are infinitely more interesting than something like Gambit and have a lot more potential at this point. And I don't think this should be a, we drop this and we leave it. I think this should be a, we drop this and then every so often they update it or they add maps or they add new features like you're talking about. I went into this with a little bit, well, this is way more than I thought we were going to get. I thought we were going to get Riven's Wishes 2.0. I thought we were going to get weekly quests and that was it. They had 2 months to work on this or whatever. You know what I mean? I think it's highly likely this was a scrapped activity in the past and they were able to pick it up and work on it. If not, I have no idea how they did this so fast.
I can honestly tell you, because if you look at everything, it already exists. So it is piecing you take a PvP map and then you add some pyramid skin into it. You have G mentioned the Rift Ball. You've already got the ability to pick up an orb, which is the battery, and you're throwing it into the forge, which we've done before. The turrets would be one of the newer things in the trip mines. Those are something that they had to create. But you have, then you have spawn points for enemies, funnel them through, and they use crucible maps specifically, because I thought about, I was like, what if you use a gamma map? Those feel a bit more open. You wouldn't have quite funnel points and everything. Crucible maps are smaller corridors where you condense everything in. So I'm like, okay, what crucible maps are going to fit for this? Some will be too small. No way in hell it's going to be on the anomaly, but disjunction doesn't quite feel right, the shape of it, if you got to move around it as well. So they're going to have to pick the maps that are big enough and triangular shaped so you can kind of have three different sides. It's all already there, and then they just use what they've got. That's why, I mean, it is, they pulled something together a short time because they're able to use all the different facets of what they've built already. I mean, one was stand in a portal, or another one was the, you know, like the little darkness, little pyramid floating icons that you shoot. They showed like the bonus modes.
It's all put together.
Yeah, it's like all of that is put together. And I'm not saying it's easy to do in two months, but it's all mechanics that already exist. So then you figure out just the placement and the waves, and then the if there's randomness to it and stuff like that. But it is everything that already exists smashed into one thing. So I am pleased what we get in 2 months.
But it's like Bungie, everything we've heard Bungie talk about, like changing existing activities, like even things like skyboxes that I would assume would be trivial, they have come out and said like it's not that easy. You know, and they've made changes. They've said to make these changes faster. I just think it's way more than I thought. By a lot.
More than you thought because you've been given Stockholm Syndrome after years of...
I don't know if Stockholm Syndrome's the right... Because I would... If it was Stockholm Syndrome, then I would be happy with something like a Riven's Lair. I just have tempered expectations based off of years and years of...
I mean,
I think tempered expectations is fine because you're being realistic. But I also think, like... As a player, it's not your problem that they have tech issues.
Absolutely not. But as a content creator, if I get people hyped for shit and then we don't get that much, then I have to deal with the fallout for that.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, you can expect a lot from developers while also realizing you're probably not going to get it, especially if you're familiar with their development cycle. I think, look, this is a free activity that they're adding to their live service game to make up for the fact that they had to delay their game. I didn't really have expectations at all. Wasn't even really planning on logging on, but what I saw was enough for me to go, okay, this is kind of interesting. I totally agree with G's criticism about leaving the world for the boss fight. That seems super weird for me. It also seems to remove your payoff of having built up defenses and whatnot, right? Like you are putting these defensive capabilities everywhere, and then they're like, well, screw all that noise, go over here and fight this boss completely unrelated. That seems kind of odd to me. I also would have probably included, like, this is probably going to be controversial opinion, but I imagine like maybe some sort of competitive mode. And when I say competitive mode, I mean like not just scoring, but also like it would be cool if, you know, one of the options for a boss fight was like an invader, you know, a boss wave that summons another player.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Gambit. Like, where are you going with this, Travis?
Storm the fortress. No, because I wouldn't call it like competitive, like two instances playing at the same time. I'm talking about like, wouldn't it be cool if there was something like in the Dark Souls games where you have like a faction you join where it summons you to an event.
Oh, so you're just queue up to be on the, you can be queue up to be like the God Invader. You can queue up to be a boss if you want to or something. Correct. I mean, that would be cool. Yeah. But again, this is one of those moments where I have to be like, you're not going to get that.
Yeah, realistically, obviously. If I just told Scarrow that he's not getting a door to open up the second social space in the tower, I think it's more than fair to say we're not going to get this. But I can still be, you know, I can still say I wish, right? But like I said, it's a free activity that I wasn't expecting to happen. If it were me, I would have just said, don't waste your time and development power on other stuff. Focus on the expansion that you really, really need to succeed. But the fact that they did this and are giving it to their players to keep them busy for a little bit, I think is cool. So I'll probably log in and play it. I agree. It's a 1.0, right?
There's some kind stuff of where I would going, like yeah, them it's to, like almost a,
yeah, yeah I would it's like to it's see them
kind
improve
of a 1.0 if then, yeah.
Only having 50 levels tells me that probably everybody's going to get to level 50 and then beat it and then run out of reasons to stop playing it and competing, which bothers me a little bit. But again, that's it's an 1.0. Issue
they've had for a while where you couldn't even
like a when they put activity caps on stuff, then it just becomes achievable. And the whole point in a horde mode is it's supposed to be kind of unachievable. Yeah.
What's the European aerial zone that like we do,
or at least unrealistic for most people?
I hate that.
Like what you said, like what you said, competitiveness. I that's why I'm so mad about the 50 cap, dude. Like it, I think my biggest gripe too is they did so much work making, in my opinion, the activity much worse than if they just made it simple and bare bones. Because if it was infinite, dude, people would be grinding, thinking of team comps. There'd be guides, videos out there. They could add something as simple as a leaderboard to show who got to the highest wave, what they did, mm-hmm. how long it took, how many kills. You know, you could do simple stuff too. If like with making it a core playlist activity, custom games, go in and set your mode to get to wave 50 and see how quick you can do it, or wave 20. You know, I think they just really said, hey, this is the activity. This is how you have to play it. So yeah, I don't know.
I feel like for a lot of that, like random stuff like that, like I think in an ideal world, I also think the 5-10 boss wave thing is a little too structured. Like I think it'd be cool if you it had optional objectives that unlock that, or like it was a random like public event style thing or whatever. Like that didn't always
objective
happen.
If you did like if you stocked up some objective throughout it, then you would go get a bonus and that would get you a big pile of scrap. And that would be a reason to go on like round 13. You get to go in there, not just 5-10.
Yeah.
5-10,
it's 5-10. It's essentially the dog round in zombies, right? Like it's like, all right, now instead of defending, go attack for a second and then bring it back. Not that dog rounds were attacking zombies, but I mean, it's like a special thing, you know? Yeah. But I think like the random parameters like that are probably take a lot more time and nuance in the like development time than a structured thing like this. So I think in my opinion, I would think that's probably a byproduct of a reduced development time on this. I agree that there are, should be a lot. This isn't the perfect form of this at all.
This is like a, not a beta sounds bad because it will function, but it feels like you could have different types of turrets. You could have different, you know, instead of decoys, you could have just more variety even to your choices besides machine gun, one to level, like faster and faster and faster, trip lines, which seem weird, and then the decoys are fine, but it's like
even just like where you can put them, like they would be cool if there's customization there or whatever.
It's right now everything is, as you said, it's like it is what was able to be made in 2 months, 2.5 months, whatever they were able to put together in a short time. It's pretty good using basically everything they can in the game as tools, but it is a 1.0, of which I would like to see what, you know, version 2.5 or 3 looks like.
I want to see the coil version of this, essentially, right? If this is deep dives.
Yeah, I just think Bungie is not that studio. I've always used the word stubborn because, like, they just make stuff, and I'd be shocked if we got an update to something like this within the next 2 years if the game is, you know,
probably
still in the same development cycle that it is, you know, which sucks, but
yeah. I don't think we're going to get an iteration on this. I think it was a much like Lightfall, kind of a Band-Aid to a problem that they had, because for whatever reason, they're really committed to keeping those engagement numbers up.
Mm-hmm. I would be shocked if we don't
players to keep a break.
I would be shocked if they don't expand on this premise, though, like the base defense premise. Like they're moving all their seasonal activities are moving to more unique ones. You know what I mean? You had the card building, you had the roguelikes. I would be surprised if they didn't do more tower defense style things in the future as we go into episodes and stuff, because Menagerie Lights aren't cutting it anymore. You know what I mean? Like people are sick of those. Your public events are, people are sick of those.
Shout out to Prescott in chat, because you know, he's always got some pretty good ideas about stuff, but it's also just, I mean, he said it, it's a lot of stuff that we get is just put there and then just left to be what it is. No updates. I mean, Dares of Eternity, for example, somebody in chat said.
Eventually.
And then, removed, which is the other part. And I was like, how long do you guys think this will be in the game? Will this be permanent now, being as they're not supposed to be removing stuff? I still don't know how much of the seasonal stuff is going to stay going into final shape.
I don't think they can keep it around after final shape because of the lore reasons, right? Isn't the whole point that we're
defending from the witness
because we're defending it?
That's true. That's so that we can, kind of why I was wondering.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a lore reason, but my thinking is they'll probably take it out and then they'll wait a couple what are they called? Not seasons anymore.
Episodes.
Yeah. Episodes. They'll wait a couple episodes, and there'll be like a version of this that reappears like way down the line. But I don't think they're going to iterate or update this version of this activity.
I think that has got to be one of the hardest things, just from the dev perspective, to say half of the shit that you guys make is going to be temporary.
Yeah.
And so are you going to put you're not making a game that sends a discount and is printed and is permanent out there that you can put your life's work into or something. It is so much temporary. I do wonder, again, limited time resources, what they can put out in a time fits probably the temporary cycle, but also what does that do for even a mentality for a developer sometimes to say,
I don't think you lose like as much as you think you do when you take an activity out. Like, you still gain whatever specific technical mechanisms you built for that activity. You gain the fundamentals, the technical know-how, the yada yada, so that later down the road, if you decide that you want to do a Menagerie 2.0, you go, well, we already know how to do that. We have the tools to do it. There was a specific team that worked on it, yada yada. For me, the stuff that gets taken out of the game, I'm more worried about like the game preservation side of it, of like, where does that exist and how do players go and experience that? Or what if you missed it and you want to catch up on it? There's like a lot of like, I have a little bit of anxiety about like when things are taken out of games that I never got to play and never will be able to like replay, because
somebody can't experience just
kind of a painful type of FOMO. But it's also a live services work. You just have to kind of get over that at some point.
Yeah.
I don't think the lore really matters. I mean, strikes, raids, dungeons, blind well, all the stuff exists in the game. Well,
you sound like a Bungie employee.
But I'm saying to them it doesn't. Like, I don't think they're going to. I don't think the fact that this won't make any sense in 2 months, I don't think they care. And honestly, I don't think most players care.
I think you're right on both counts. I think Bungie has made it pretty clear they don't care about the lore. So,
but I would love to see expanded on in the future. What do you guys think?
It could be perfect, but I don't disagree with you. I mean, yeah, if they give it the right changes, dude, like it could become one of the best activities in the game.
But yeah,
it just needs those changes. And obviously mine come down obviously to how I'd like to see a horde mode. But I think I think the best case scenario would just be give people different ways to play. But
I bet you get to wave 50 the first time you play this mode, and then you have little motivation to touch it again.
Yeah. If the loot's good.
Yeah. I'll the loot might be baller,
but yeah.
So are you guys excited about Midnight Coup, Fallen Guillotine? See,
the thing
Blast
is, loot doesn't draw me to activities anymore, though, because I've never met a Destiny activity that I couldn't beat with not perfect loot. You know what I mean? There's no activities that are like so aspirational that you're like, oh, well, I need this really, really perfect gun. It's like middling guns will get you through activities. Like, nothing is that hard in Destiny that you need.
We low-man stuff, so we're a bit different, right? So like, we need a perfect cataphract. I like the slammer's the first weapon I've been excited for ever in the last 2 years, I guess.
Why
because
do you
it's
need it, though?
Because it's better than the other half, and it's for activities that I run, like low-mans or speed runs or just getting around Destiny. Yeah. It's marginally better. And so it's
but you could beat those activities without that version of it. So why do you need it?
You can't necessarily beat everything with just another half, because it can't really do the damage thing, which is what the slammer can do now. So it just makes things a little easier or a little more convenient. I don't have to switch swords.
Easier,
I don't have to switch
a little
heavies.
More convenient. I get, but like for players that.
For most people, like, these are niche cases. Like I said, like the first example I gave was cataphract. Like, that's really interesting because we solo dungeons and we solo, like, Nezirak without a cataphract is a lot harder. That's just how it is. Solo Nezi.
Sure.
Unless you're doing rocket strap, but that's a whole different thing. You have to farm for cold comfort too. And so it's like, we're the wrong people to talk about niche loot, because we actually we're the target audience for niche loot. So
if you use it to shoot once, I'm getting it. If it comes into a speedrun, a low man, or a solo, like even cataphract, I've used that for two of our Goss runs, which I think if I didn't, or actually at least one specific run, if I didn't have that cataphract roll, we weren't clearing, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it is useful in those niche situations, but I don't disagree either. Most players could probably do every single activity in the game if they're competent by snapping and throwing grenades with some racers, you know,
with crafted weapons only. Essentially,
I just don't think I don't think I've lost trials cards because somebody else had like a better roll of a gun to me. Like, usually it's like I get outplayed, right? And so
those things very rarely matter as much in PvP.
Yeah,
these are definitely PvE things for the most part.
This is my main.
Yeah, It's what it's just optimization, man. I mean, look, this is the only game we play, so it's like
exactly. y'all are built different.
Yeah. It's just what it is.
I'm gonna go back to my tower defense.
To be fair, though,
tower defense, first person, real time strategy, all of it.
Mm-hmm. RPG.
To be fair, Midnight Q, Recluse. I don't know if you've played the entirety of Destiny, but I feel like every single player that's been playing from year one, even if you played, I don't know what it was, probably year 2 to 4. I'm sure everybody's going to want that just for nostalgia, dude. The sound Midnight Q makes, the way it feels, the way it handles. Recluse 2, I believe that's coming back.
The ornaments are coming back, so we have they're bringing back retarded guns. Yeah. It seems like it. And they teased Luna's Howl in today's TWAB as well.
Yeah.
So
I think for nostalgia, it's another whole reason for people to grind.
Yeah. Nostalgia. I'm excited. And it looks like there's a lot of weapons in it, too. I thought it was just going to be 6. It seems like it's a lot more than 6. So
I think 4 are coming back, too. Like, Blast Furnace was in that one art.
Hammerhead.
I don't know what other... Hammerhead's coming? Okay.
Well, I had the ornament for Hammerhead's in Eververse, so probably. Okay.
I'm hoping Kindled Orchid comes back. That would be sick.
Yeah, we get the Brave Arsenal weapons, a new social place, plus new rewards, Destiny 2 Year 1 inspired armor, and then they just clarified something basically saying the upcoming armor set for the Destiny 2 Into the Light is not inspired by Destiny 1 armor, but early armor concepts from Year 1 of Destiny 2.
The original version of the TWAB set Destiny 1 armor, but it's clearly modified parade armor from vanilla Destiny 2.
Yeah. They could have done a 20-minute gameplay segment, not gone all the way to wave 37, and explained everything else in one stream. So now next week we're going to get a stream that has to sit live for another 30 minutes because they messed up the Twitch drops and people are freaking out about their emblems. You guys, you have enough emblems. It is not a big deal. But on the other side...
You're about to receive death threats for saying that.
That's fine.
That was a crazy thing to say.
It's a digital postcard that you have thousands of already.
As I found out as it was reaffirmed to me this weekend, the emblem community is fucking crazy and half of them are sociopaths. So good luck.
That's good. But I was gonna say, so we've got the weapons, the social space, and what coming next week. What do you think is gonna be in stream 3? At this point, I am running out of ideas because now they're covering the loot. What?
The new crucible maps.
By the way, Bontus, I want to show solidarity that emblems are stupid.
I got
movie of the week emblem and I just put that on to stun on people and that's all I need.
Ares got he was like a bungee shield, kind of like a moderator for them for a while, and he's never taken that off because nobody has it. So there's some rare ones out there.
I think the reason, and this is could be 100% copium, but I think the reason they were so secretive about what other maps that Onslaught is on is because they're the 3 new Crucible maps.
I mean, that would make some sense that a couple of them are. I would believe that.
Are we confirmed to get 3?
Cool. Yes, there's 3 Javelin, 4 size ones. They originally weren't supposed to come out until May. I believe Stream 3 will move them up, but that is a Scarrow 9 certified copium.
It would make sense because I was
What does Scarrow 1 through 8 think?
They're dead. Screw them. okay. But you're
like a Highlander.
Yeah. No, I'm like an exo. but there's 3 maps. They're all J4 size approximately. There's a Neomuna one. There's one on the Root Pyramid, and there's one on Europa. Yep. Yeah. Okay. And those are all 3. The whole lore premise for this was we are defending our solar system as the Witness's forces close in, and all 3 of those are near important populations or groups of people or things that we could be defending. Pure copium.
It's a bit too logical and it makes sense. And it's kind of the only thing that I could figure out what the streams would be for. So that's about as logical as I could.
If it's not those, it's going to be Final Shape Tyson Green dancing on a stage or something. or Final Shape, that one. Yeah.
Do you think we get anything Final Shape teased anywhere in these next 2 weeks?
I think they'll have their own stream for it.
It's like we're kind of...
I hope one of the maps they use for what's the activity called again?
Why am I Onslaught.
I hope one of the maps they use for Onslaught is the tower as it exists with no changes, like just terribly built for like not a PvP activity.
That would be awesome.
With an elevator and like a really long hallway to the market and like just stuff that makes no sense.
You're setting
sense.
Up defenses in the hangar and then you gotta go hang out with Korra.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be sick.
You fall down the stairs.
And you're trying to defend Ada. Everybody's like sacrificing for Ada 1 in the hallway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I think the marketing machine for Final Shape is its own thing. I think they're cooking. Because I think this, the whole reason they're doing three streams, in my opinion, is so they can build that sequential hype. Like, we're all of us people that are already playing Final Shape, we're going to watch that first stream. But if people hear, like, oh, Midnight Coup's coming back, they're talking about it next week, more people are going to tune in next week. And then if they tease something else the following week, more people are going to tune in then. I think they're truly trying to get that freight train moving. But we'll see. I could be totally wrong. That's how I would do it. You know, you have to draw people in, and nothing does like media hype. So
three geeks in chat, sacrifice for the sweeper bot. Thank you for the super chat.
There you go.
For a tiny stream too. Like, it's not, obviously people knew it wasn't a big update. I think they pulled at least their over 100,000 concurrent viewers in Twitch. It's crazy to see how much like pool they have. And so I really do think if they do stuff right, dude, like the game could be so good. They could succeed really, really consistently too, even throughout their episodes. So it's cool to see they still have that hype. People are always keeping an eye out on.
I think if you build it, they will come, right? If mm-hmm. when Destiny content is good, people play it, and when it's not good, people do not play it. And I think that is just, that's how it should be, frankly, right? You don't want people so invested in a game that they're willing to just become slaves to it and play it when they're not enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I hope you know, the Final Shape does really well, and it's good enough to justify and warrant people to come out of their hidey holes and get back into Destiny. Do you guys think even if it succeeds, people are still going to leave after the Final Shape? Because I don't
believe as many people are going to leave as they say. Personally, I think Destiny people are weird.
I mean, Destiny people are weird, but I feel like there is a feeling of
finality.
Yeah, there's a finality to Final Shape. The episodes are.
I think it will.
Well, I was going to say the big test is going to be.
The reason I think that you might be wrong, Scaro, is because another group of people that were very similarly extremely invested, even when the chips were down, was the MCU community. And guess what happened? As soon as Thanos was dead and that was over, people stopped watching it.
Yeah.
And like legit, they were just like, no, I got my ending. I don't need to go and watch, you know, the new Falcon or whatever. Like I'm fine. And so I think there were a lot more factors.
There was a huge oversaturation of pretty mid content right after that happened.
I would say that is extremely true of Destiny for the past couple of years.
I think it matters what they put out directly after Final Shape. If episode one does not bang, I agree. There's probably going to be a fall off, but if episode one's a
I think there's that problem anyway of like people just being like, look, I put in my time, I'm already kind of burned out, I got to the ending, I got that thing I wanted. And unless the content is really, really stellar on phase two or whatever you want to call it, this new storyline they're developing, I could see people legitimately just like signing off. I don't think you get people's loyalty forever for no reason. I think you really have to earn it, and I think it'll be on Bungie to prove that they can earn that players.
Yeah, I think, Prescott's got a point. It's like, Lightfall did really do a lot of harm. It burned a lot of people. There was a lot of hype going into that after Witch Queen. Some people are probably like, was Witch Queen the best we're going to get? And then you get Lightfall, and you are proving so right after experiencing that one to say, we went from Witch Queen to this. Now, Final Shape, they've had a little bit more of a delay. Obviously, you think they're swinging for the fences because Lightfall was, you know, shoved in between expansions where it wasn't likely to exist in the first place, and we know that. But also, I think the big one is going to be about 4 to 5 weeks later, because you'll have the expansion out. If it's 2 weeks later, then you'll have your episode. And if the content drops the way they said it was going to, it's not going to be so much weekly time-gated stuff. It sounded like, and we don't know until we get it, sounded like it was going to be a six-week chunk of content, and then that six-week next one. How many people log back in for that next 6 week chunk of content after that first 6 weeks is going to be interesting. And that episode, by the way, comes out 3 days before Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree. Massive, massive expansion drops 3 days after the episode drops. So some people are going to be like, episode, cool, knocked it out. And then they're going to have a reason just to bail quick anyway. And because that is a big one. It's one game, but it's like there are still enough people that will want to go check out the new big thing. So it's like I will be very curious how they handle episodes, if they can put enough content into it. But again, even if it is a variation on seasons, some people will, as Travis said, they got to see The Witness, they got to finish The Witness. I don't know how much more I need. And that is, I think, just a real worry that Bungie has to prove everyone that there's a reason to keep going. And that's just, don't know.
Like, an example is, I'm probably one of those people, Scarrow, who, like, they'll have to earn me back for whatever comes after Final Shape, because I've been pretty burned out for a couple of years, and, you know, I still cover it for IGN, so I'm going to still cover it when I get paid to. But the idea of logging on every week is kind of perplexing to me nowadays, whereas a couple of years ago I would have been like, oh yeah, you got to log on and do the dailies and all that stuff. But
sure,
they will have to earn my continued, like, free time playing of this game, non-work related playing of Destiny. And I mean, to be honest, I'm excited for that, because I think Bungie has shown time and time again that they, when their backs are against the wall, they find a way to pull a great game out of their behinds. And I think, like, you know, you make Halo and then you say, yeah, we're going to make an even more popular game after that, and people will go, there's no way you can do that. And then they make Destiny. So.
And I think they're in the most serious version of that from all the internal reporting. Seems like they're in the most serious version of that yet. So I, like, if Final Shape or whatever doesn't bang, I feel like that's not Destiny in trouble. I feel like that's Bungie in trouble, right?
Exactly. And they are in trouble. Like, by the way, they're in trouble because they have a parent company.
Just
for those who were saying, oh, having a parent company will give them security, it's the exact opposite. Having a parent company means that you now have things that can get you.
I think what changed is they doubled the number of heads in their studio and, like, tripled their studio space on
do they have that many more devs working on the game? Has that been
confirmed? No, not on other IPs.
Okay, yeah. I'm just saying for Destiny, like, I don't see a world, because they haven't expanded, I guess, those working on Destiny, or to my knowledge, had a big change in leadership. I just don't see a world where the episodes are successful. Like, I don't know. If not, like, they've never been able to do it before with seasons. Every season's just been super bland and super dry, unless you're getting a raid or a prize raid, or some massive change like Solar 4.0, Arc 4.0, or 3.0.
We just don't know how much bigger the episodes are. If they are significantly bigger, then I could see it. But to your point, like, if they're slightly bigger than seasons, I think you're right. It's going to flop pretty hard.
They're also going to be longer, too. So even if you have less seasons or less episodes to make than seasons, they have to last longer, which, you know, longevity is not their strong suit. So I don't know. We'll see. But
yeah,
I'd imagine the game's going to die off pretty quick after Final Shape.
I don't.
But
think
I also think that's natural. Like,
but if the game dies off, I'm not convinced Bungie doesn't, or gets sold for part, or, you know what I mean, like, pulled apart.
Although,
it's like, they don't have that. This is it. Destiny is it.
And you know, tune in next week for the topic of next week's show as we discuss all the rumors and speculations going on with regards to Bungie.
Yeah. Oh, no. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be next week.
Is that actually
that'll be next week, just because time wise I want to make sure we kind of respect everybody's time.
Sorry, that is a can of worms for hours.
Yes, Rebecca Valentine, absolutely crushing it. She is epic. She is pretty amazing. I hope. And then she's also, and also it seems like IGN's dealing with some internal stuff, so I'm sorry to see that going on. So it's not great, but no, Rebecca Valentine is, she does some kick-ass work over there. So if you do see her or talk to her, because I know you might cross paths, tell her she is freaking awesome.
Yep. I see her pretty regularly.
Yeah.
She's cool. She lives in the city.
Nice. Well, so next week we have a lot to talk about, because rumors and emails and other things have been floating around the internet. So yeah, that'll be a little more speculation. Cog could be back. Scara, if you want to come back, you're more than welcome to discuss.
I'm totally down. I'm going to tell you right now that email is bullshit. I have no doubt in my mind that email is bullshit. The cross one, specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a whole lot of unconfirmed sources is not great to base a whole lot of content off of. So it's like, depends on where you're getting your information from. Rebecca writes an article.
It was just a nothing burger.
Rebecca writes an article. I'm going to read it. It's like a random email from a YouTuber, no matter who it is. Like, yeah, that's a thing. So, but
yeah.
Yep. Gentlemen, got to make sure you guys can get where you need to go, because I know some of you guys are going to start streaming and doing other things.
The kitchen.
Yeah, food, dinner kind of thing. Are you grabbing the belly? Be like, I need food.
I'm grabbing the belly. I haven't eaten since before the Bungie bounty. I'm a hungy little Scarrow.
Hungy?
Hungy.
Well, Scarrow, you got anything fun coming up, or tell people where to find you?
Sheesh. Oh, that's a hard question, E.
It's all NDA, and so nope, never mind.
Yeah, well, GCX will be at GCX. Final Shape will be cool. End of the Light will be cool. Do I have any personal projects coming up? Almost at 100K. I've been saying that for the last like 10 years now.
So you are close. You will get there. No question.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe I'll die before then. We'll find out. I don't know.
I love the optimism. It's great. Jeeve, what about you? What are you working on? Are you kicking something off in like I don't know, 13 minutes you'll be playing? Or
yeah. Well, actually, dude, I don't even know if I'm going to play Destiny tonight, actually, because what's it called? People's accounts have been losing data. Did you see that?
Oh, I think it's resolved. Yeah. They said that got resolved. Is it good? Yeah. Okay. Check Twitter, but I think I saw it was resolved.
But no, just random stream stuff, raid challenges, maybe picking up some more solos. I will also be at GCX, so definitely looking forward to that. That's
see you there
again. A very cool, unique community experience. So, yeah.
Travis, couple things on
I will not be at GCX, very intentionally, very happy about it. I've got two reviews going live on Monday. One for the very weird RTS FPS tower defense game. It's called Outpost Infinity Siege. I have to write that review tonight, get it queued up for Monday, so look out for that. And then also South Park Snow Day, which I already finished the review a while ago, but that will be live on Monday as well. And then I have a whole bunch of preview content I cannot talk about because GDC is currently wrapping up here in San Francisco. And I saw a ton of cool stuff that I'm very excited to talk about. And you can look for that on my Twitter at TyGuyTravis or IGN.com. And I'll be in touch with some really exciting reveals and stuff to talk about real soon.
As for me, Dragon's Dogma 2 review is out. Check that one out. I obviously enjoyed it. I raved about it earlier. Rise of the Ronin, I've got that to play and a couple other things to work on. So stay tuned to the channel for guides and reviews and other things, because as you guys know, I'm still playing Destiny, but I'm also playing as many other things as I can get my hands on. And so far, it's been quite a bit. So I've been very busy, but it's a good thing to be busy. So, well, gentlemen, thank you for being here. Travis, thank you for taking time out of GDC. We appreciate it. Thank you, Bungie, for all of the collector's editions that were sent in people's ways. The tower is pretty cool, I got to admit. And the little figurines. Shout out to... rest in peace, Zavala. That one always hurts a little bit. That one's going to feel weird for Final Shape if Keith David's there. It's like it's the first time he speaks and it's not Lance Riddick. It's going to be weird. Whenever it happens, it's going to be weird.
So. It's got to be Final Shape because if they're redoing stuff, like there's no way they're going to have half and half, right?
It so would make sense. Just, yeah, it'll probably be in there. So. All right. Well, chat, you guys have been amazing. I think we got everything reasonably timed here tonight and should be back to COG next week. And we'll see if anybody else pops into that guest chair next week as well. Either way, interesting discussion and we'll know more with the reveal on Tuesday. So I will see some of you then. But for this episode, number 289, we are climbing up there. So we've been doing this for a minute. 289, been a good one, everybody. So thank you very much. And it has been
the last word.